it's narrated by Taffeta. We call her a fabulous queer creation of color. And she's a plus size, mixed race, gender non-conforming protagonist.
Baby, have I got a ball gown to show you. Behind every great man, there's another great man.
The fact that you are dreaming is the road to your freedom.
This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Poland's homophobe in chief wins re-election. Russian lawmakers follow Putin's path to inequality. And Roger Q. Mason emancipates Lincoln. All that and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 18th, 2020. Poland's president, Andrzej Duda, has narrowly won re-election with anti-queer rhetoric as a cornerstone of his campaign. He defeated liberal queer-supportive Warsaw mayor Rafał Trzaskowski with 51.2% of the vote in a runoff election on July 13th. Trzaskowski supports civil unions for lesbian and gay couples and marched in his city's controversial pride parade in 2019. Duda's stump speeches condemned what he called LGBT ideology and said it was worse than Soviet indoctrination. He was backed by the Roman Catholic Church, which wields considerable political power in the country. The far-right Duda enjoyed the support of older and rural voters. A near-record 68.2% turnout gave Duda the smallest electoral victory of any Polish president since the fall of communism in 1989. With their policies based on the primacy of the traditional family, Duda and his Law and Justice Party will have another 5 years to oppress LGBTQ people. Queer activist Bartosz Staszewski told London's Independent that close to 50% of voters don't want to live in a society based on hate. He said, "Young people do not believe in the primitive propaganda of the Law and Justice Party," and maintains that he has hope that young Poles will be the change we desperately need to see.
Polish courts have annulled two local governments' LGBT-free zone declarations this week. Close to 100 local jurisdictions have dubbed themselves LGBT-free. That's about a third of the country. The two zones were found to violate constitutional guarantees of equal treatment and bans on discrimination. Poland's constitution specifically says that no one shall be discriminated against in political, social, or economic life for any reason whatsoever. In east-central Poland, the LGBT-free zone of Klow was struck down on July 15th. In addition to citing the constitutional violations, the judge said that the town council did not have the legal authority to make such a declaration. A similar LGBT-free zone declaration was struck down on July 14th in the southwestern municipality of Istebna. Lawyers for the town council echoed President Duda's claim that they were not banning LGBT people, just LGBT ideology. The judge called that argument turning a blind eye to reality. Both judgments were filed in response to complaints by the Office of Poland's Commissioner for Human Rights, Adam Bodnar, and both can be appealed. But LGBTQ activists and allies are savoring the victory of the moment. Bodnar spokesperson Anna Blachek-Banasiak said the rulings set precedent and will definitely go down in the history of the fight for human rights in Poland. Meanwhile, European Union member states have been discussing restricting EU funds for the parts of Poland that claim to be LGBT-free zones.
On the heels of his unsurprising re-election, Russian President Vladimir Putin is tightening the screws on what few rights there might be for LGBTQ people. Bills to protect the family were introduced this week in the State Duma, Russia's lower house of parliament. The proposed laws solidify the ban on marriage equality voted into the Constitution earlier this month. The same referendum gave Putin a virtual lifetime presidency until 2036. According to the Russian Interfax news agency, The legislation bans adoption by same-gender couples and transgender people, also nothing new. Same-gender unions legally registered outside Russia that had reportedly been using a loophole in the family code to gain recognition would likewise be banned. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said that the legislative package basically formalizes the referendum vote. Max Olenichev is a lawyer with the queer advocacy group Coming Out. He told NBC News that there will be more hate speech and hate crimes, and LGBT people will suffer more violence. Putin and his political allies are backed by the influential Russian Orthodox Church.
The governing Sovereign Council of Sudan has removed floggings and the death penalty for consensual adult gay sex, according to the Cairo-based Bedea LGBTQ rights group. However, convictions in the East African nation can still bring prison terms of up to 5 years for the first offense and up to life in prison for repeat offenders. Maria Shodin of the global queer rights group Outright Action International nevertheless called it an important step for the human rights of LGBTIQ people and human rights in Sudan overall. Among other reforms, female genital mutilation has been banned. Apostasy, that is, the formal disaffiliation from religion, has been decriminalized. It had also been punishable by death. Almost half of the 72 countries that still criminalize consensual adult same-gender sex are in Africa, according to the UK-based Human Rights Trust. 9 countries in the world punish it with execution, including Iran and Saudi Arabia. Kenya's High Court recently voted to maintain their country's colonial-era sodomy laws. But life for queer people on the African continent has slowly but surely started to improve. Last month, Gabon repealed its laws banning queer sex. It joins Angola, Seychelles, Mozambique, and Botswana.
Colorado's gay governor, Jared Polis, signed 4 LGBTQ-positive bills into law this week. One of them makes Colorado the 11th U.S. state to limit the use of the gay or transgender panic defense. That's the dubious principle cited by attorneys to justify murderous attacks on LGBTQ people. It's still used in most U.S. states, the exceptions being California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Washington, and now Colorado. The American Bar Association has urged the other states to fall in line. Polis also signed bills allowing qualified pharmacists to prescribe HIV prevention drugs and requiring health insurance providers to cover the cost. Another measure makes it easier for Colorado minors to change the gender on their birth certificates. They'll need to provide a statement from a licensed healthcare provider attesting to their gender dysphoria. A previous requirement that they had undergone transition procedures is removed. That bipartisan bill was championed by 4 lawmakers, including Democrats gay Senator Dominic Moreno and Representative Brianna Titone, the state's first transgender lawmaker. Titone said at the signing ceremony that the bill especially meant protecting Black trans women who are the most vulnerable of the communities we are trying to protect here.
A non-binary gender option on birth certificates is now possible in 2 U.S. states. Parents in Maine can now choose a non-binary designation on the birth certificate of their child. People over the age of 17 can also request forms to make a gender change on their existing birth certificates. Legal consent by a parent or guardian is required for anyone under 18. The non-binary designation will appear as an X. Non-binary Mainers are already able to get the X designation on their state IDs or driver's licenses. The change in the gender marker rules comes from the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. In Oregon, the Court of Appeals ruled that 53-year-old Jones Hollister has the right to legally change their gender to non-binary. The non-binary option is already available on state birth certificates and driver's licenses, but those changes are only administrative, not legal, according to Oregon Public Radio. A county court judge had rejected Hollister's petition for a non-binary gender marker. The appeals court said on July 15th that a circuit court judge has the authority to grant the requested change of legal sex, and that the new sex designation must affirm the petitioner's gender identity, whether it is male, female, or non-binary. There was no opposing side in the appeals court case, so the ruling stands without further action. Hollister celebrated by having cake with their spouse. They said they look forward to receiving paperwork from the court with their correct gender marker.
Finally, a lesbian in the woodpile poured gasoline on U.S. President Donald Trump's personal bonfire of vanities this week with the publication of an explosive tell-all book. Trump's niece, Mary, describes him as an incompetent, narcissistic sociopath in Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. Mary Trump is a clinical psychologist herself, and her insider analysis of the family dysfunction confirms what other professionals have written about the president as outside observers. Her book sold almost 1 million copies on its first day of publication, despite efforts by family lawyers to stop it. Mary also talks in the book about being reluctant to come out to the Trump clan after her grandmother used the F word regarding Elton John's appearance at Princess Diana's funeral. She now has a wife and daughter. NBC's Rachel Maddow interviewed Mary Trump for a full hour on July 16th, a show that brought the lesbian broadcaster her highest ratings ever. The president's niece revealed during the interview that it was sort of normal to hear family members, including Donald, use the N-word or use anti-Semitic expressions. Doing her usual meticulous job, Maddow got her guests to definitely confirm that the uncle in question used that language himself.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending July 18th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recorded remotely during the COVID-19 emergency, but is still being written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Christopher Gall. Stay safe.
The works of writer, performer, and educator Roger Q. Mason span theater, television, film, and public thought. He's the recipient of the Chuck Rowland Pioneer Award, the Hollywood Fringe Festival Encore Producers Award, and he's been a finalist for the Lark Playwrights Week and the Screencraft Play Award. This Way Out's global queer read and producer Brian DeShazer zoomed in to chat with Mason about his latest offerings.
Hi, this is Brian DeShazer with This Way Out, and I am joined by Roger Q. Mason, playwright, author, performer. And we're talking to Roger, one, because he was part of our This Way Out Global Queer Read-In, and we found out that he has a couple projects that are in the works that he's won awards for, so we wanted to talk to him about those two projects and one of the projects he contributed to our read-in, which is on our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. And that's from a play called Lavender Men, an emancipation play. So I want to talk to Roger about what is an emancipation play and the connection about with Abraham Lincoln. So Roger, welcome This Way Out.
Hi, Brian, honey, you got all the receipts. I don't need to do a thing, child. That was the interview. Thank you, next. Oh my God. The subtitle of my play, so first of all, I think we should say Lavender Men, an emancipation play, imagines the queer relationship between Abe Lincoln and his legal assistant, Elmer Ellsworth, who was in his office in the years before he moved from Springfield to DC. And so the play follows Abe as he is sort of rising politically and on his way to his first term. But, you know, we can't tell it straight on because we're LGBTQIA+. So we have to have a little bit of queerness involved. So the queering of the tale is that it's narrated by Taffeta, who is a very picaresque individual. We call her a fabulous queer creation of color. And she's a plus size, mixed race, gender non-conforming protagonist who is peering into Lincoln's world in order to understand the anatomy of her own world, a world in which she is disenfranchised, ignored, abandoned, lonely, and invisible. And she for whatever reason, feels that if she can somehow dismantle the myth of the great American man and infuse it with some notion of queerness and particularly alternative queerness, she can somehow build the road to her own freedom.
That's amazing. And thank you for starting to explain not only what the emancipation subtitle means, but also the character that's driving this information about how are we learning to relearn our history through a queer perspective, given the fodder that we've been taught for centuries. So I did a little homework, and the first time that this idea pops up of Lincoln was gay was 1926 by Carl Sandburg.
Correct. And Mother Sandburg says that Lincoln had a touch of lavender.
Right, right.
And that's where the play title comes from, Lavender Men.
Oh, yeah.
Right, that's where the play title comes from. It's one of the notions of the avant-garde that comes into the play, because we never explain in the play why it's titled that. That title just sits like a nice purple syrup on top of the cake. And you have to sift through the tea that's been spilled and figure out what it is and why it is. Because sometimes a title is, you know, very direct, and sometimes it's about juxtaposition.
So what you're saying is, like, when you see the Emancipation play subtitle, that does not mean that the storyline goes from somebody who ends up being emancipated within the story, right?
Oh, honey, wouldn't it be convenient if in 90 minutes we could all be free? I mean, the fact of the matter is, what Taffeta learns at the end of the play is that in order to be free, she has to first unlock herself from the bondage of her own self-doubt and lack of self-worth.
And in a sense, you're also trying to do that in filling in the gaps. Us as LGBTQIA plus people, our journey is the road to authenticity, our authentic selves, and our journey to finding ourselves. And what you're doing is, in my opinion, I haven't even seen the play or read the play, but what I am imagining is that what you're ending up doing is filling in those gaps that Lincoln wasn't able to tell. That is important and meaningful in our contemporary times.
And the important thing is that we're looking in the past for possibility models. We're looking for some kind of indication that we have a lineage and a history and forebearers. Because if we allowed mid-century politics and the law to have its way, we would still be in the closet and in the dark. We would be non-existent. We would have to perform and behave in the heteronormative, psycho-civic sexual behavior policing mechanism. And then whatever we did, don't let it be seen, and certainly don't be out loud and proud about it. So how do you foster a sense of pride when you exist in a society that renders you completely invisible, that not only admonishes what you do and who you are and what your desires are, but says they don't even exist? I think a lot about the early days of the AIDS crisis and not even acknowledging for long periods of time that this is an issue that is of national health concern. Oh, this is a gay disease. The sort of cordoning off and writing off of issues because they are the issues specific to this community, which is marginalized, and therefore is not worth civic attention or mainstream attention. That is what we are trying to undo. And that's really the point of,
I'm Brian DeShazer, and I'm talking to award-winning writer, performer, and educator, Roger Q. Mason, on This Way Out Radio. Let's hear Roger perform an excerpt from his play, Lavender Men.
I've got a story for you. It's one of yours, but it's gonna come through me. It involves an officer and a gentleman. Yes, that's Honest Abe. What? You thought I was gonna serve you some daguerreotype realness? Eye bags, scraggly hair, all that jazz? Hell no. This is a fantasia, honey.
Don't he look good? Behind every great man, there's another great man. In the airport bathroom stall, the church choir room closet, the casting couch. There he is, whispering the nothings in his ear that nobody should hear. Why are we doing this? To your past, your history, your Lincoln? It cannot be true. It is not correct. Maybe we're right. And maybe we're wrong. But if others can have their alternative facts, then baby, we gonna have ours. And it could be true if you let it be. Who said it's not? Who said it didn't happen? Were you there? Did you follow Honest Abe into the commode? Crawl up his leg and follow the trail of his abs to his left pec, then turn right at his shoulder and crawl into his brain to steal a few nuggets of inner thought and bring back to present to me as certifiable FDA-approved truth? Hell no. So sit down and shut the fuck up. Cause baby, have I got a ball gown to show you.
That was Roger Q. Mason performing from his play Lavender Men. You can see Roger on This Way Out Radio YouTube channel perform this for This Way Out's Global Queer Read-In.
You're a busy person, Roger Q. Mason.
Oh, God.
Right. You're working on a play called Pride of Lions.
And I want you to
tell me about Pride of Lions.
Oh, my God.
Because that's coming up sooner, and people can actually see that on the virtual world as well. Tell me all about it.
I'm going to have to spill a lot of tea, honey, because the tea is hot and it is way too cute. So the Pride of Lions is a piece that looks at 100 years of police brutality against queer and trans people in this country. And it's a two-act piece. The first act takes place in the 1920s, and the second act is a contemporary act. We're doing an excerpt from the first act of the play, in which five drag queens are auditioning to be part of the chorus in Mae West's The Pleasure Man, which was a play of Miss West that was closed due to indecency laws in New York in the 20s. The segment of the piece that we're doing is basically the ramp up to their audition, and then they get into the play and it gets, and we show the raid because we need to show this moment. So my fabulous, wonderful, creative guru, partner in crime, right-hand man, Lovell Holder, and I are producing this virtual showcase of this play. And it's being presented through Dixon Place. And exactly who is in my cast, because I just have to be giddy for these children. So our cast is going to be including Philippe Balgin, Garrett Clayton, Drew Droege, Sam Gravitt, Miss Peppermint, Larry Powell, and Charlie Thurston. And I am so honored to be working with all of these people because they are tremendous craft people in our industry.
So Pride of Lions, when is the date for Pride of Lions when we can see these excerpts?
Yes. So I should say a couple of things about it. So the piece is going to be debuting at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. It is going to be online on Dixon Place's website, so folks can go on there and find out the way to see the recording. And it will be up for 5 days after that because part of the proceeds from the show are going to support the Okra Project, which is now advocating for trans folks who are experiencing food insecurity and hunger in our country, particularly in New York at this time. And so a portion of the proceeds from this show will be going to the Okra Project. and to support my very dear friend and activist sister, Eanne Field Stewart, who is just literally, you know, one of the great activists and political movers and shakers of the queer movement right now. That's some information on the Pride of Lions.
We've been talking with Roger Q. Mason, playwright, performer with a number of projects, both post projects that are in the works and works that are coming up. And the date of Pride of Lions is
July 31st, and it will debut at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on what they call DPTV, which is Dixon Place Television. If you just search Dixon Place either on Instagram or on Google, you'll be able to get to their website and they'll direct you to how to watch this piece.
Right. And also until August 31st, you can see Roger Q. Mason do a little excerpt of The Lavender Men on the This Way Out Radio YouTube channel as part of our Global Queer Read-In. I'd like to thank you, Roger, for joining us here on This Way Out Radio. And one question for you.
Yes.
There's a person in another country somewhere that's listening to a radio show. They don't have an LGBT center. They don't have a school. They don't have a support group. What message do you have to a young person of any color, shape, size, LGBTQIA, who is listening to us right now and dreaming about being like you? What do you want to tell to them?
The fact that you are dreaming is the road to your freedom. Because all of this starts with a dream. The queer imagination is a powerful political act. The fact that we take social, political, medical, religious bias and hate and somehow change and transform that energy and turn it into supreme love is the alchemy and the majesty of our identity.
I love you, Roger Q. Mason. All right, so I'm going to stop recording because I have to tell you something.
That was writer and performer Roger Q. Mason zooming with Brian DeShazer. To hear the extended interview, visit us at thiswayout.org. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and Christopher Gall, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Brian DeShazer. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors Christopher Matthews and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KKFI Kansas City, Missouri, CKDU Halifax, Nova Scotia, WOMR Provincetown, Massachusetts, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, y'all, and stay tuned.